Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free 14-day trial, go to Squarespace.com/Forecast.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 65. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
I realized in the video version, I look down when I say my name as if I'm looking to read.
Like a date.
Tom Merritt says.
What's the date? Who am I? What am I doing here?
Yeah. This is the show where we predict all possible futures over the course.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that about the show.
If you've listened to 65 episodes now, you will have heard 65 alternate futures.
I'm pretty impressed with the number, dude. 65 is a lot, and that's a lot of predictions. And surprisingly, we've had less like overlap of predictions than I predicted, which also didn't come true.
We need a wiki.
We do. Why isn't someone doing that right now? Someone is.
Joining us to do the predictings today in studio, it's nice to have an in-studio guest, Glenn Rubenstein, writer, director, journalist, reviewer of video games, leveler of DC Universe Online characters. Good to have you, man.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
And also joining us from Utah, right like across Salt Lake City from you, Scott, Randall Bennett, tech pundit, journalist, creator of Tech V, among many other things, countless to name.
How you doing?
It's good to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, no problem. Good to be on the show.
So, Glenn, have you met Randall before?
No, we have not.
Randall,
met.
Glenn, Randall.
Howdy.
Glenn, good to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
You both have sufficiently vague introductory titles.
That's always good, I find.
Stuff at some point.
I think you guys understand each other. All right, let's start with a prediction from a listener. This one comes from Rinnis or Rinbrand in the chat room. He says, "Hey, Tom and Scott, I'm just starting to listen to Podcast 63 and should probably wait before sending this email to see if you address this, but what the heck? This is more of a comment on a prediction, but can be seen as a prediction itself. The whole nanite replicator general prediction is always a popular one, but I can already see where this technology will die. The first person who scans in a $100 bill and replicates it will basically make this technology banned until our governments move on from the monetary system, which I also predict won't happen until after at least one bloody revolution."
Yeah, see, a lot of our predictions is there's always this unknown factor of people who will gain the system, who will mess with it, who will hack it or whatever. And this is kind of another example of that. I think we would, hopefully, if we got to the point that this technology existed, it would become very clear. And this is why I think I predicted a few shows ago, we would never see this tech come to light if anyone had anything to say about it. Because the minute that happens, like teleportation, it immediately destroys many, many, many things that we're used to having traditionally. Money, and if it's transportation or if it's teleportation, then we lose mass transit. We lose the need to fly anywhere. We lose the need to do a lot of things. Suddenly, industries crash and die and burn immediately because of a technology if it's accessible enough, quickly enough to enough people. So I think he's right in the sense that if it just happened today, and the first guy to get it had a $100 bill and he went for it, that'd be one thing. But I think we'll get to a point where hopefully when this technology is looming and we're making steps toward it, we'll have already decided that money isn't important. We'll go the Star Trek path and that's where we'll end up.
Yeah, I mean, I think the nanites have to have a little bit of encryption in them to address Rinnis's concern. So that a nanite that makes up an actual $100 bill would actually have a signature to it that is hard to crack. Nothing is impossible to crack, but it would be very difficult to crack. So you couldn't just replicate it. It would have to be replicated with the government-issued secured nanites.
Well, doesn't it seem like, and maybe that's going to be the race for the next 100 years between the world's superpowers, is who's going to acquire first these technologies that, as Scott said, sort of, make everything else obsolete? Who will have the corner on teleportation? you know, I don't know about time travel necessarily, but essentially like these super powerful technologies that almost seem unattainable and seem like they would be so problematic. Doesn't it seem like sort of some evil genius or shadowy government organization is going to have the idea that, you know, yes, it would be terrible for the world, but we need to get our hands on it first.
Sometimes yeah. I oh, think for sure. systems like this, they don't, I don't know, if you look at like copyright, that's a good example. You look at how we have the ability to copy media at any time we want, distribute it however we want, all these different things. There's still governmental systems that are in place to somewhat maintain the status quo. To me, that would be sort of, there would be somewhat of a similar systemic shift, right? We'd see maybe people say, you know, I have this great invention. You can't copy it. Literally, like, don't copy it with nanoprobes. Like, that's not what I want to have happen. And you would see some sort of systemic way to eventually allow for this. You know, I think those sort of systemic things always, the technology is, of course, really hard to do. But then on top of it, that system sort of evolves around the technology as it builds, you know. So it's, to me, those problems are something that they get worked out because they have to. I mean, if that technology is available, that's something that has to be dealt with, you know.
Well, it has to be, but usually what happens is you have a long tail. So if you went back to, 1984, and suddenly the internet as it is today, with all of the functionality that has evolved over this, you know, the last 20 years, let's say, all of that is in place immediately. And suddenly film is easy to copy and audio is easy to copy. Yeah. And suddenly one day on a Wednesday, this happens. Then that's what flips everybody out. Yeah, so the exactly. assumption that we'll have this future tech all in one day, I think is not going to happen. If this stuff happens, it'll be this long stretch where these, like you said, systemic things are in place to sort of handle the thing on the long tail, because it'll be a slow chip away kind of growth. Print isn't dead in a day. Print is dead over a long period of time. So it's to me, that's what will make this thing stay. If it came all of a sudden, it was like a war games kind of invention, people would flip out, try to control it. A lot of people would die. Wars would be started, fought and lost. So yeah, I'm with you. I think that's
guns
how it'll
made
go.
From nanotubes.
Right.
Self-assembling guns.
Self-assembling guns.
I think actually more likely, the more I think about this, we just won't have physical money anymore.
Yeah.
Money won't be an object that you, it'll
be
data.
PayPal all the time.
When it seems like if you look at the divide, I mean, I don't want to get a little too tinfoil hat crowd here, but when you look at, like, you know, there's this resurgence of people talking about gold in terms of looking at gold as a real hard asset and talking about paper being a representation of that asset. Well, paper's like the middleman. Like, why not just cut that out and have it be virtual and then have be actual hard mineral worth, you know? Yeah. I mean, it just seems a little more logical.
Yeah, everything is data, but backed by gold. Gold-backed data currency.
That's good. I should get on that. I think, I should call Goldline. I should pitch that.
Yes.
You know, gold-backed data currency. It's like your own reserve, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing it. But I don't mean, who knows? You know, if you get something like PayPal, you have an institution that's large enough for, you know, the credit card companies, for instance. If you have, I mean, and really that's part of the thing we were talking about earlier with, in terms of adoption of technology. I mean, it really comes down to infrastructure and infrastructure's willingness to embrace whatever the changes. I mean, if you look at fuel sources and whatnot, I mean, the oil industry and the cars that are set up to run in the oil industry, you have all these obstacles in the way. I mean, the same thing with like food production. In terms, if you were to look at, you know, the benefits of eating, you know, a plant-based diet, you know, people know these benefits, but there's this entire agriculture industry and there is layer upon layer of people that are just tapped in the current system. So there's no real incentive to change, because they're getting their money. They like their money, their profit. They've got the business down. So when you look at currency, that's where it gets interesting, because credit card companies, have they almost become big enough of middleman that when you're talking about transactions going through that, you know, I don't know, maybe there is some potential.
Yeah,
the problem is you're still rooted in a government currency. And last year I went to this conference called The Future of Money, and there were companies kind of debating this idea that, you know, Linden Labs kind of was one of the first people on the scene with this idea of a currency that, you know, has differentiated exchange rates across different countries, and eventually it all turns into the same currency, right? That's sort of, you know, a weird example of how, you know, something like Zynga could be a potential to have this to break out into the mainstream, right? So say Zynga starts doing this, credit thing. Eventually there's enough people, you know, 1/10 of the world or whatever, that play Zynga games, or 100th of the world, whatever the calculation is. Enough people play Zynga games that, you know, exchanging Zynga currency feels regular. And then, you know, currency becomes regulated outside of a government. I mean, that's the sort of place you'd go down. It's pretty crazy, but I don't know. I've always thought that sort of an interesting path, though, that, you know, some other company that creates some sort of utility in a currency, they're the ones who would push things in the future.
Wow, gold.
Wow, yep.
It's exactly probably the most accepted currency across the world right now.
Well, I don't know. Monkey Stick in the chat room has been talking about, has been holding on to his flus, hoping it'll be worth something someday. And I think, you know, no one understands. It was such a great idea. They have Whoopi Goldberg as a spokesperson.
I know.
Could have gone places. Flus.
Yeah, that was just an idea before its time.
No, definitely. Yeah. But, I mean, if you look at now, though, you know, I don't know, I've been looking at this lately, you know, and reading about, you know, I've been talking about this the other day about diversifying portfolios, keeping money in gold. Should keep money, you know, in yen. Now there are some banks where you can open a bank account with, you know, in a Chinese currency. I mean, essentially, there's different options that are available. And when you look at different countries, you know, well, some have said China's undervaluing their currency, you know. So, I mean, look at it. When you start getting into that, it really the idea of one universal global currency starts to make a little bit more sense when you start thinking about
China wants to be it. China wants to be the reserve currency of the world. So they've said that. That is an avowed goal.
Yeah.
All right. Send us your predictions. Hopefully it'll be as thought provoking as Renis's was. Email forecastpodcast@gmail.com. That's FOUR forecastpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can post them up on our blog, forecastpodcast.com, which, by the way, the blog is up to date. I know it got a couple weeks behind there, but it is all up to date. So post your predictions there. Time for our short term predictions. And Randall, we're going to start with you. When you look in your crystal ball in the near future, what do you see?
So I actually created a chart for this.
Oh, we lost your video right when we went to you.
That's exciting. Am I back now?
Yeah, we got your audio still, but
Well, I actually had a chart, unfortunately, so I can't show.
Okay, yeah. Now you're back. Now we can see you again.
You can see me officially. Yeah. Okay. So I still can't see myself, which is awesome, but I'll just assume that all is good for now. So I created this little chart, which you can't see, but I'll explain it. Basically, my prediction is that by about 2015-ish, 2014, 2015, video production will have come far enough down in price that we'll see a new form of media evolve. So to me, the Twit network in general is the first sort of shot off the bow or off the bow. Is that how you say it? Yeah.
Off the bow. Yeah.
In this sort of media revolution. I've been thinking about this a lot. This is an idea that, you know, I'm really interested in figuring out. But I think that video, to me, hasn't truly evolved yet the way that it can. So there's a lot of barriers to entry. There's things like, you know, you have to have a camera, you have to have a set, you have to have all these different things. One of the things that I see on the horizon is DSLRs have come down in price quite a bit, right? They're, you know, you could get a Canon T2i Rebel for about $750, including the kit lens, which is not exactly stellar, but that thing records video and it looks pretty good. Now at $750, it's still prohibitive of, you know, being accepted by the masses, right? It's still something that's just out there that you can't just experiment with. But I think that as DSLRs come down in price and thereby video cameras come down in price as well with things like the Red camera and Sony's NEX-1, we'll see a new form of video media that combines great things about the internet like data and other information with sort of some of those ideas that blogs had, right? This power to the people, anyone can do this, anyone can experiment with just their computer. And, you know, I did some crappy math, we'll say. I thought by 2014, enough structural elements will be in place that we would see this new form of media evolve. Now, what does it look like? My guess is it's very data-driven. There's lots of, you know, people using the internet to connect to video using things like Quartz Composer and other sort of really nerdy stuff. But more to the point, anyone could have a TV quality broadcast, much like Twit. Twit to me is, you know, a TV caliber broadcast. But imagine if anyone could do that without having to buy the TriCaster, without having to buy the cameras, without having to spend money on the mics. You know, those sort of technologies, I think, will come down so that we can see another revolution in media, sort of like we have with blogs, but with video. That makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. Scott, you're doing this too.
Yeah, I think I mean, one of the weaknesses of what I've been doing is there. I've always, you know, I love the audio medium, the medium of radio, and that's kind of been where my focus is. But more and more, we're adding video into the mix, and more, I'm having to figure out solutions to accomplish a lot of what a small studio does, or what something like the Twit Cottage does. to be able to, you know, mix and match lots of different video sources and all this kind of stuff. I am always on the hunt for that stuff getting cheaper, easier, you know, more versatile, more cross-platform. And you see it happen every day. There's some new apps up on the Apple Mac store that are pretty sweet and really affordable that do a lot of this kind of switching for you. So there's ways for that to happen. But I also think a really important part of this, Randall, is internet infrastructure getting to a point where that is less and less of an issue or less and less of a consideration and more of a just, you know, let it happen. I'm reminded of like email in the late 90s was always just a little janky, a little screwy, didn't always work. Stuff would get lost. Spam became a problem. It just seemed like this cool thing that kind of worked. And now you don't even think about it. Email just works through services like Gmail and other stuff and what people are running on their own servers. Piece of cake, snap, snap, done. But I feel like video and getting it out on the web easily, quickly, and efficiently and having it be up with lots of visitors and viewers, I think that's the next major step to kind of open the floodgates for cheaper hardware, cheaper ways of doing, you know, actual production on the fly. So I'm with you. I just think the internet needs to catch up a little bit and maybe Google will do it. Maybe YouTube does it. I don't know.
I think one of the structural pieces that's missing still too, on top of that, I mean, you have the sort of the distribution of content is essentially figured out at this point for all intents and purposes, right? You can get video to YouTube, you can get video to Vimeo. Like we know that video can be distributed online. It's that production piece that's really broken. So my kind of prediction is that as that, you know, as things hit that tipping point, as that like video curve, as DSLRs become just so inexpensive that you can experiment with one without even having to think about it. For me, that's like a $200 or $300 purchase. Like you don't have to ask your wife if, you know, like $200, you can pretty much buy it and just like be like, hey, yeah, it was for fun. I'm just testing it out. Once you get down to that level, you know, some of the other production pieces need to be fixed, right? Like structurally, you mentioned software is available. So there's things like Wirecast and Boinks TV today that are sort of, they give you hints of what the future could possibly hold. To me, there's going to have to really be like an actual like structural shift in the software. Like I think we need to see a free or open source version, right? So the WordPress, right? If you think about WordPress and how Blogger existed, you know, LiveJournal existed, these sort of elements existed for blogs, but there was that kind of crucial open source piece that made the floodgates go wide open. I think that's, you know, if we saw an open source version of production software that lets you do TV quality stuff, I think that to me would be the thing that breaks it wide open, right? And that's kind of, you know, that's my big hope. And that's what, like, I think about that a lot and I want that to happen, but I'm not sure that, you know, that's a, I mean, it's a still, there's lots of structural stuff that needs to, like a community to support it, people that really want it, those sort of things to make it really work.
Glenn, what do you think about this being a new form of media? Do you think it would be something new on the scene if it gets cheap like that?
It's interesting because, I mean, what we're talking about with this is the idea essentially more live broadcast, you know, and what I come from with my background, especially I've worked on Lonely Girl 15 and spent the last, you know, better part of the last 5 years dealing with web series and web video on the fiction side of things. I mean, I think we've already seen sort of the head of that revolution opening up, and I could go on and on. I could fill multiple podcasts worth about all the problems that web video has had in the fiction serial area in terms of, you know, all occurring primarily at a bad time with the economic downturn and whatnot, given that a lot of it's advertiser supported.
Yeah.
But I mean, you've seen a lot of with Lonely Girl 15, I mean, we were doing, you know, a daily series and we had a community, we had interactivity, we had all these things going on. We were able to do that around a series. We had to build our own website, you know, build our own sort of architecture and structure because no one had really done that before. And I think since then there's been a lot of shows that have tried to do that, but it hasn't really emerged, I think, as strong of a medium as some people would like. So I think with live broadcasts, it was interesting now to see that really becoming more more of a force. And I think it is going there in the coming years. I mean, but now if you were to look at, I mean, obviously with what Twit has been able to do, and then you're seeing other high profile, you know, these video networks starting up. So I do see that as sort of the evolution. But yeah, I think from a production point of view, it's going to be a matter of getting the cost low enough. But then secondly, is there enough of an audience to support, you know, hundreds of these style networks? And more importantly, are there enough advertisers to really underwrite it? Because I think that allows something to really carry on.
I think the audience comes from the innovation, right? Like to me, this idea of a new form of media, what's not going to work is if we just take television or radio or whatever and just try to copy that a billion times, right? Twit works for a very specific reason. It's because Leo Laporte's passionate and he, you know, is known and people kind of like banded around him. And then you add people like Tom and other people in and, you know, you get this, everyone kind of knows what Twit's about and they have the idea behind it. Not every random person can just do that, right? Like, I don't think that I could actually pull that off. And I tried before. I've tried to do video shows on my own before. And when you take what is just being done on TV and you try to replicate it on the web, I think that's where you run into problems. Like Lonely Girl 15 to me was so revolutionary in that it wasn't a, you know, it was a fictionalized serial thing, but like it didn't feel like, you know, Scrubs or Friends or something. It felt like a whole different thing. And to me, that's where this new form of media will really get the audience share and the advertisers, is if they can, you know, if we can figure out some way to maybe it means the page is more interactive, right? Like maybe stuff on the page shifts around with the video, or maybe it's the audience interaction. It's the way that, you know, you create a server that can listen to the audience, and rather than just have a chat room, people can vote on stuff, and, you know, maybe the questions can pop up and down. I mean, those are sort of my guesses and what I'm kind of experimenting with. But I think the real kind of, oh my gosh, moment is when that superstar who didn't have access to media before figures out one unique thing. And then, you know, for me, it was Peter Rojas and Gizmodo and Engadget. Like, I looked at Peter and I was like, wow, this is, you know, I can read about gadgets all day, every day. That was when blogging really hit home for me. And I was like, wow, like, this is it. This is new. This is interesting. And that's, you know, that's the moment that's going to happen. Some kid is going to, you know, talk about some topic that he previously couldn't in, you know, with an interactive way that wasn't possible before, because the production quality is good enough. It looks just like TV. People respect it. And then I think that's like the world changes, you know, media shifts, things look different.
So. Live streaming needs its Fred.
Exactly. God help us all. But I think, I don't know, I mean, I've seen, you know, obviously with what Leo has done here at Twit, I mean, obviously this is an example of it done very well. And then if you were to look at some other high profile ones, I mean, like what Adam Carolla has been doing for the last year and a half, I mean, they're getting their footing, but it's still really, I mean, they're like, they're making most of their money off charging admission to live shows, you know, I mean, they're going about, and that's a great example of people coming to the table that aren't coming from a tech background to, you know, in fact, I mean, Adam Carolla is someone who's notoriously tech, you know, avoids it at all costs. So, I mean, to see how they've been going about it has been kind of interesting.
In each of those cases, though, it's still personality driven.
Oh,
right?
Definitely. It's like, we haven't Kevin seen Smith. A homegrown, Kevin Smith, that was the next one I was going to mention. We haven't seen a homegrown superstar yet that has really risen out of this without bringing in an audience from elsewhere, which is really, I think, the curve.
The closest example I can think of is maybe Zay Frank, right? I don't know if you guys saw his show back. It was called Zay Frank's The Show, right?
Yeah.
He was like the one sort of edge case example of someone who has just raw talent, and, you know, he was able to use the internet to just blow it out there. I think the problem is he's a sort of exception where he had so much raw talent, and he also was in advertising and he understood how the web worked, which is helpful. But, you know, I think with weblogs or with blogs in general, you saw people who were just really passionate about specific topics, and they were able to take what technology had given them and then become more notable, you know, like a Deuce or, you know, any of the people who did Autoblog or Deadspin or Gawker, any of those. Like, those people were all outsiders who invented this form of media that was just lots of updates, constantly a conversational tone, right? And those all became sort of the norms of blogging. I think that's like, I think it's early to speculate like what the norms of this sort of video media is going to be. And what I'm focusing on, what I think a lot of people should focus on, is instead just start experimenting, start trying things out, knowing that it's unlikely to be a commercial success at this point, right? Like, don't, you know, quit your day job, but start, you know, experimenting with things like Node.js and see if you can get that to show up in video, and, you know, things like that to me are the like building blocks today, whereas in 2014, 2015, this new form of media will fully emerge.
Oh, too late for you, Scott. You already quit your day job. I know.
Yeah, too late. too late for me.
Yep.
All right, let's move over to Glenn. Your short-term prediction, things you think will happen sooner than later. What do you got?
Well, it's to build off of what we were just talking about, I actually think that within the next 10 years, we're going to see content creators, because of the way television has gone in recent years, where now you're seeing that live TV has such an emphasis, because that's the stuff you can't really DVR, you know, like reality, cheaply done stuff is a big segment of television. But then on the other hand, you have this, I mean, TV has been on such a streak for the last 10 years in terms of quality, with it really being a creator controlled medium and doing these very strong productions. I think that we're going to start to see a hybrid emerge. And I predict within the next 10 years, you're going to actually see some shows that, in order to ramp up their monetization, are actually going to have some sort of split window where, you know, if there's a new season of Breaking Bad that comes out and the premiere is, you know, on a Sunday, that after that premiere of the first episode, the season's going to continue to air in subsequent Sundays. Or you're also going to have the option to buy the DVD at the start of the season and essentially monetize these people that normally would watch the show for free but are really hardcore about the show and want it all at once, that might not buy a DVD if it's released after it already aired on broadcast. So I think we're going to start to see this new sort of emergence of a way of monetizing the hardcore fans that are willing to pay that premium to have the more instant gratification and access. And I think we're going to start to see some series launch this way. I mean, look at Walking Dead as an example, where, you know, there were a set amount of episodes sent out in advance to critics. So when they were talking about the pilot, they weren't just talking about the pilot to sell you on this new series. They were also talking about, this is what's happening on the season. It builds more word of mouth. And I think that it's actually going to be a new way of doing things. We're going to have people like even the Joss Whedons of the world, who haven't had as much success with broadcast, be able to do their series similar to Dr. Horrible, sell it on DVD, but then have it have a broadcast window after. Sort of a new hybrid way to monetize the rabid audience, as it were.
This applies to movies as well. Like if I go see Avatar 2, I can walk out of either see the movie and walk out and buy the DVD or the Blu-ray or some kind of code to get the digital version online.
See, I think
or even
that.
Skip that altogether.
Yeah. They've tried that so far, but it's been with lower profile films. And I think because of piracy, I don't think it's going to be as much with movies. I think with TV, though, I think there's something inherent about it where it kind of works. I mean, I know you guys were talking about frame rate a few weeks back about the idea of, you know, wouldn't it be great if we just had new episodes year round, but we only saw them every 3 weeks or a month.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of similar to that, the idea that, you know, you're going to be able to do these productions for shows that might not do as well in terms of audience, but making more of the audience that they have. I don't know what the tipping point is.
It shows that might be on the bubble, right? Like you think about an Arrested Development, you think of like, I probably would have paid when that show came out just because I thought it was so funny. And I mean, even now, this series Archer, I don't know if you guys have seen it on FX. It's an animated show. I think it's probably one of the funniest shows I've seen in a long time. And I'm like, I want to watch this all the time. I think it's hilarious. I would totally pay $20 right now if I could see the next 6 episodes.
And if
right?
there were a million people that felt that way.
It would finance, like, even if it's not a million people, even if it's less than a million people, if it's, you know, if it's $20 and if you could make like $500,000, that could actually finance future episodes, right? You could use that as a method
but one of the problems that you see right now, and this is already a problem with shows you're talking about, is we have distribution methods to get those shows outside of the normal TV medium, but they're so afraid to do it either day and date or beforehand that I can't even get, like, if I want to watch Archer on, let's say, iTunes, I have to wait a day. It's a day after, you know, I mean, I'm not that impatient, but my point is, it's still an industry that's afraid to give it to you the day it airs on TV.
Well, I think what's going to change.
I just don't think they're going to be that quick to, like, you know,
I think there's going to be some better copyright protection. I mean, there's going to have to be. I mean, essentially, there's going to have to be some secure way. And we've already seen it a little bit. I mean, where you can't make a perfect digital copy of some things that are streaming if it has a certain level of protection. You can't just use tamper data to get the address of the stream and download it, you know, directly to your hard drive. I mean, I've seen some of that because I've tried to rip some streams where I haven't been able to do it using any method that I know, at least.
Not even like a screen cap?
Well, you could do it, yeah, of course, or you could just run it straight out of the computer, but you don't really see the piracy groups aren't really big on, you know, for some reason they tend to like, you know, the crisp direct web rips. Not that I download those things or I would ever, you know,
you have no idea what condone. The piracy scene.
Yeah, like, people doing such a thing. Yeah, but no, I think there's going to have to be some better protections, essentially, to make it happen as far as digital goes, because piracy would ruin it if there was a whole season available.
I don't know that piracy would ruin it, and I don't think you're going to have digital protections that are going to be good enough, because it only takes one, even a screen capture, to undermine the whole thing. But I think people that you're talking about who are really into the show want to have it right away are not going to want to wait for it to show up in a screen cap on BitTorrent.
Yeah.
They want to have it.
Yeah.
The idea of, like, I'm going to have the object, the collectible, because, you know, the first objection I can hear a lot of people saying, well, optical disc, people are just going to want to download it. But you're talking about going straight to the hardcore fan. And to them, it's like, you're not just getting an optical disc. Yeah. You're getting an object, and it's going to have pictures in it and maybe a little fold-out booklet. And, you know, you're going to have a thing that you're going to want to have because you're such a fan of that
show. And there is
value
in that. There's definitely value in that. I mean, and I think if you look at the way word of mouth currently works, it's actually sort of the opposite, where people don't watch the show in broadcast. People that did watch it become fans of it. So when the show's out later on DVD or Hulu, I mean, it's like how I am with like Party Down or something like that. I'm telling everybody, you have to check out this show. It's so funny. It's so good. You know, and then people watch it on Netflix Instant Stream or get the DVDs, you know, or trade it around that way. I think if you had it where you could buy the DVD at the start of the season, the word of mouth would be different, where you're actually saying you need to watch it. It airs, you know, at this time. I think it would build better word of mouth. I mean, I think it would actually increase the broadcast viewership.
Right now, the model is you put something on TV, it makes a lot of money, you put it out on DVD, and you put it in syndication on cable channels so they can fill out their schedule. I think that what you're talking about could end up just being a shortcut version of that.
Yeah.
Which is, we don't bother putting it out on broadcast TV and doling it out every week. We put it to DVD and then we syndicate it out, because I think there's still going to be a need for curated live streaming channels that show you stuff, because you just want to turn something on and see what's on. As we get more and more on-demand choices, there's like we have with portals.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to want that sort of like, wait, now there's too many on demands. I don't know what's on when. I just want to see some sci-fi. And so I'm going to start the sci-fi stream website.
When there's an audience, there's always going to be an audience for broadcast. I mean, that definitely. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it just becomes another piece of the revenue, you know, in terms of syndication. I mean, looking now like with what IFC has been doing, you know, showing like the Larry Sanders Show and Undeclared and Freaks and Geeks, shows that have been on DVD, you know, in various forms to various extents over the last 10 years. The hardcore audience for those shows has already seen them to death, yet IFC is now making a big deal with that, like Mr. Show. Yeah. But there's still value in that. There's still
value in showing. And I can't tell how many times I've had a movie channel show a movie and I get sucked in and start watching that I have on DVD.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm still watching it on the movie channel, because that's just the situation, you know, I happen to get sucked into.
I came downstairs one day. My brother was watching Dazed and Confused, and he's sitting there watching it with commercials. I'm like, Jeff, we have this on DVD. He's like, you know, I like to feel like I'm watching it with other people when they're watching it. Just like, there's some sort of simple
to that
logic.
Absolutely.
In that. You know, that definitely
I love
makes
that movie.
Sense. Yeah, that's great.
great movie.
Let's move on to our long-term predictions. These are the more in 100 years we'll all be in flying cars sorts of predictions. And Glenn, we'll stick with you and your longer view. What do you see?
Well, let's see. In 100 years, I'll be 134 years old. And I hope, you know.
Are you just going to predict your longevity?
Yes. Well, that's how I think of everything.
Still be here.
Because I think of the future, it's like, well, I'll be, you know, X years old. That's always the first way I always seem to come to me. No, I think, you know, lately I've been really encouraged and, dare I say, slightly optimistic about the recent news about cryogenic preservation and the advancements that have been made in that field recently. Ever since, that's a subject that has fascinated me ever since I think I was probably 10 or 11, there was an episode of L.A. Law about a guy who wanted his head frozen when he died. And I remember at the time that concept just blowing my mind, that, you know, you could essentially preserve yourself to be thawed out in the future. But now with this newer advancements that have been made in terms of the idea that we're going to be able to essentially, you know, grow our own organs, freeze our own organs and preserve them. And so essentially that we could be alive in 100 years, maybe not with the same hardware, but carry on. I think something like that is just the ultimate in terms of promise that the future holds. I mean, above and beyond that, it's so weird to think about, because think about like 100 years ago. I mean, we had motion pictures, there was music, you know, there were all these things. So the idea that the arts will still continue, but the technology will advance. It's interesting to think about, you know, if we look at what the last 30 years is and then to picture what the next 100 years will be in terms of technology's impact. It's really hard to even fathom what that would be.
So we're going to be our own organ farms?
I think so. I like the idea of that. I think that there's
your own heart transplant.
Yeah, no, there's something nice about the idea of, you know, being able to essentially breed your own body parts out of stem cells and, you know, freeze them and have them waiting around if need be. And then freeze yourself if, you know, you get to a point where technology can no longer help you. I think, you know, eternal life, I mean, it might suck. You know, if what we're to believe that we've seen, you know, from the Highlander movies,
eternal
and vampire
life
fiction,
it might suck.
It might get boring. You know,
I'm scared of like being lost in your own brain and thinking. I mean, of course, you'll continue to progress and understand all this knowledge, but then I just feel like you'll get bored. You'll be like, man, I can't like go skateboard. Well, I guess maybe at that point you could go skateboarding again and you know, regrow your own bones or whatever.
The reason that old people don't want to live to be 130 is because by the time they're that old, nothing works anymore.
Yeah.
Like their brains are rattled and their heads don't work and their bodies don't work. And so they don't want to hang around. But if we had ways of, you know, preserving the quality of those organs, specifically the brain, sure. 134 sounds great.
Yeah, and that's, and I think, or you know, and it could be terrible, and spoiler alert for a 10-year-old movie, or it could be like Vanilla Sky, you know, and you're lost in your own brain and nothing makes sense anymore, and Kurt Russell's there and it's all very weird before the Deus Ex Machina explains everything. But seriously, though, I think that I'll tell you the thing that would actually suck the worst is imagine that they figure this all out, right? But they figure it all out about 10 years after you die. And just thinking, man, and I just made it a little longer.
Yeah, I've had the idea for a story called The Last Person to Die. And it's the story of, you know, they finally figure out the singularity and they figure all this stuff out in the organ transplant. And who is that last person who dies
in the full
knowledge that they're like, yeah, tomorrow we bring it all online and, you know.
That's actually a fantastic idea. Yeah. That's like Twilight Zone level of just ironic tragedy,
right.
You know. But, I mean, and when you think about it, that's maybe that's the argument, by the way. You know how people talk about, you know, all the things we should do to make sure that we, like, and some people say, oh, I don't want to live to be 80 or 90. That sounds like those last 10 years, I think I can skip. I'm just going to run my body into the ground and go out, you know, while the getting's good. Maybe that's the argument. To essentially for longevity is that it could, that last 10 years could be the difference between eternal life and replacing it all, you know, or essentially missing out on the opportunity.
All right, let's move over to you, Randall. You've got a fridge full of clones to help you make it into your long-term prediction. So we're going to assume you'll be alive for it. What do you got?
Yeah, my long-term prediction, I'd say, is maybe more of like a 50-year prediction, and it might even be faster than that, assuming how fast technology kind of evolves. It sort of ties the two things I'm most, you know, I think about that I love about technology and I love about my iPhone. You know, one of them is contextual awareness and then access to information at all times, and this how this kind of ties together is some sort of Wi-Fi-like connection that you plug into your brain, right? So this whole idea of like the brain, you know, the matrix, like thing back in your back of your brain, but you know, something that you're able to, you know, attach, and you say, oh, now I'm plugged into the mainframe or whatever you want to say. But then as you walk places, you know, I love Microsoft had this research video a while back where they, you know, someone had a phone and they're able to, you know, drag something from their phone to their wall, right? And I think to me, those are the sorts of, you know, user interfaces that excite me. So my prediction is some sort of network, you know, and not only the you know, contextual awareness and information following you around, but it's the, you know, the computer is going to make decisions for you based on what's currently in your brain. So I'm going over to my sister's house this weekend. You know, the brain, my car knows exactly how fast it's allowed to drive so that I know exactly when I'm supposed to leave to get there on time, right? Things like that where, you know, the Internet of Things will start this whole revolution, but then having a computer that has access to the memory contents of your brain, that'll sort of bring it home. And to me, that's sort of the techno future, right? The thing that I, you know, you think about the protests in Egypt and, you know, if you could get any piece of your brain out at any time with everyone being able to completely understand your communication with no filter, and I was able to effectively communicate something to you right away, I think that to me is, you know, it breaks down all sorts of barriers. It breaks down, you know, it's just like lovey-dovey techno utopia that, I don't know, that's what I'm hoping for. And
what you're saying would go a long way in one regard. And that is, okay, let's say in this stuff that is going on in Egypt and if people had the ability to snapshot capture the moment they're in. So let's say that moment is. Yeah. I'm at the end of a street corner. I'm being tear gassed. There are tanks coming after me.
With emotion.
I'm full of adrenaline because we're going to, you know, kick some trash and I'm with these guys and we're all going to stand up for whatever we think. And if we could capture that and get it over here and then get that so that, you know, we could consume that in a way that was meaningful, you would have people with a much deeper understanding of every kind of conflict or famine or whatever may be going on in the world that you may not have a good clue on. Just simply because CNN told you something, but you would really have an essence of what that guy on the street is going through. I really like that idea.
Yeah, and I'm getting my master's degree in communication, and so all I think about right now is just communication topics. And one of the things that we were talking about last week in one of my classes was that, you know, the idea that computer mediated communication, it has this like low bandwidth, right? It has, you know, you can't share emotion, you can't share feelings, you can't share these things that I think are crucial to how you actually decide whether someone's telling the truth or not. You know, just as one example of, you know, additional information about communication. To me, that's the stuff that I would love to see this sort of, you know, brain implant thing solve. It would be a way for, you know, you to actually, you know, communicate just like you would an email, but have it be 100% legitimate because someone could tell the frame of mind you were in, right? Or maybe there's ways, you know, of course people want to figure out the deception and all these, you know, other sort of edge cases of people who are
I'm thinking
less scrupulous.
Like sci-fi novel, just right away. Exactly. The idea of being able to fake. I mean, it kind of reminds me of a similar idea, the movie Strange Days, of the idea of being able to, you know, record and transmit experience and feeling, you know, and it's definitely interesting though.
Yeah.
Can you hot swap the organs that Glenn's talking about while maintaining your Wi-Fi mind connection?
Maybe the it just takes a copy of your brain, and then the computer just thinks like you would be thinking with no stimuli, and then it gets reinserted after your brain's like swapped out, right?
Sounds like Dollhouse, someone in the chat room said.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Bit. Yeah. So hopefully it won't get canceled.
Yeah. Hopefully my body won't get canceled.
Your ISP doesn't go out or the government doesn't shut it down.
I want my organs to be work like a Drobo. I can just pull out that liver and put a new one right on it. All right, these aren't even the crazy predictions. Our crazy ass predictions segment is coming up, as well as four questions, Scott. But we have to tell the fine people about Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high quality website or blog. They are sponsoring us here at Forecast, and we need to welcome them like they deserve. Ladies and gentlemen, so if you haven't tried out Squarespace, we implore you, go do it. It's what we use for forecastpodcast.com, right?
Yep, we do. And it works great. All the features you would ever need to run a blog like that are right there.
All-inclusive services optimized for both beginners and CSS experts. So you don't have to know anything about websites if you're like, sure, I'd love to help, Tom, but I'm not one of these coder types. You don't have to be. You just go in and you start up your website and they have templates that you can pick from. It's very easy to follow. But if you are one of those coder types, you can get in there and modify the HTML, modify the CSS, make it look exactly the way you want. Hundreds of design templates, modules that you can use to add pictures, add Twitter stuff, add comment threading, all kinds of interesting ways to spice up your blog. And you can even import your current blog. If you have one on WordPress, Blogger, Movable Type, Typepad, any of those, you can bring the data in, and they're committed to data exportability. If you decide not to stay with Squarespace, you can take it back out too. You're not locked in. So try them out today. You get a 14-day free trial. Go to squarespace.com/forecast. That's Forcast. Let Squarespace know that you appreciate their helping to make Forecast possible. Give them a shot. Squarespace.com/forecast. We thank them for their support. On to the crazy ass predictions. We are going. Ooh. Oh yes, I'm going to stick with Randall here to start us off. These are your craziest prediction. Time frame doesn't matter. What do you got?
You know, I've been trying to think of my craziest predictions all day, and I've been coming up a little bit blank. The only one I'm getting like somewhat close to is that in the year 2000, as Conan O'Brien would say, stuffed animals will be your brothers and sisters, and you won't ever interact with your family.
These would be like autonomous sort of creatures that you would now have, not just as pets, yeah. You would consider them your
family.
Your family. Do they have feelings? Do they love you? Do they, you determine that? Who determines that?
Exactly. I think it's a combination of like, you determine what your other family members think of the stuffed animals, right? So it's sort of like, yeah, if someone's being a jerk, everyone makes their stuffed animals be a jerk back or something. I don't know. Those are the sort of details that I think that get worked out in the future world of stuffed animal family.
It's like a Tamagotchi come to life to kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the idea that their behavior would be determined by nurturing. Like what style of nurturing you threw in there. If you were abusive and terrible to them, they would, you know, that would be their response back. Do you feel like that'll cut into birth rates, that we'll see a decline in sort of human reproduction?
But that's maybe why, right? That's to combat. So for every one person, they just grow the people in labs, and they only grow like one person at a time, and then they just surround them with countless numbers of stuffed animals to socialize them.
This is like John Waters meets the Wachowski brothers.
Totally.
It's a very furry future you're describing.
Oh.
Yeah. That has got to be one of our crazy-assest predictions of crazy-ass predictions that we have ever had.
Glenn, yeah, it's an oddball for sure.
Yeah. Glenn, dare I throw it to you?
Oh, okay. Well, not so crazy. I think Yahoo and MySpace will merge to eliminate the redundancy in laying people off.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think that could happen very well. You know, I mean, why?
Just lay them off in the same company, you're
saying?
Mahu.
I think...
MySpoo.
Yeah. In the next 100 years, at least two or more major religions will consolidate and merge, figuring that their beliefs, you know, they're not that different. Let's just get together and make it all work to consolidate power, as it were, for the upcoming, Armageddon before end times. I think, yeah, we'll see, you know, two religions fully make a merger.
I'm trying to think if there's good examples of successful. We've seen schisms like crazy in religion. Have we seen a merger?
That would be interesting.
That might be a first. I'm racking my brain.
Imagine like Scientology and like LDS. Just say, you know, we can
figure
something out.
You can sort of consider Catholicism's appropriating local customs to be a bit of a merger.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's usually seen as a conversion and then an appropriation. I think Hinduism.
I think there are probably, you could find more sort of localized examples, like in the South. I'm willing to bet, any evidence of this, but I'm guessing at some point, some Baptist church and another Baptist church decided to join forces and be one church.
Yeah, right.
But that's kind of different. That's kind of same religion sub-merger. We're talking more like, that's the thing, is you're not going to have a merger on a large religious scale that involves two very different ideologies. That seems weird to me. Like, that seems a little bit like that just wouldn't happen. You're never going to see the Catholic Church and, let's say, Muslims suddenly are the perfect combination.
That gets into a weird sort of enemy of my enemy, like sort of, you know, like end of days situation.
Right.
You know, or
so
like
the aliens are coming and like,
there are all those Christian organizations that are very supportive about returning Jews to Israel, you know, if you want to go, because they believe that is necessary, because that works with their beliefs, you know, the idea. So, yeah, there's definitely mutually beneficial ones. But I don't know, in terms of the craziest things I think that could happen, I don't know. I mean, we've seen companies merge. Why not? Why not organized religion just giving it a go?
Well, I'd say your best bet is Catholics and Episcopalians. They're so darn close, you know, and there's been talk. There's been talk of like... actually having Anglicanism brought back into the Roman Catholic Church. There've been some churches in England actually switch over from being Anglican churches to being Catholic churches recently. It's kind of, some people consider it a troubling trend in the Anglican world.
No, I mean, it's interesting. I don't know. Granted, you know, I got to say in terms of bias, I mean, my father is a rabbi, so, you know, a little bit of bias. But I think, so there are some reform, like ultra-reform Jews where I think, you know, like almost more like secular atheists, you know, or they could just, you know, sort of maybe with Buddhism, you know, to an extent, you know, that idea. Because they're really mellow about it, you know, really with the exception of the not eating pork thing, you know, and, you know, they've really rolled it back as far as you can go without being a Buddhist or just being agnostic.
Totally.
Honestly, I'd be happier if they just played nicer together. They don't have to merge so much as they just have to sort of work together towards common interests that they may actually have. But I'm here to say, Tom, I think perhaps today represents two of my favorite crazy ass predictions we've ever had. Like that one's a real thinker, and that one about the stuffed animals is freaking crazy.
And we invented MySpoo.
And MySpoo coming out soon. Someone should register that now if it isn't already taken.
MySpoo.com. Sure it is, but probably not the type of site.
Yeah, don't search for that. You'll be sorry.
That'll work.
Time for four questions, is it not, Mr. Johnson?
It is. This is four questions that we ask rapid fire style. Our guests are not allowed to think very hard. You guys have to answer these from the gut. We often ask if you're sitting comfortably. I'm asking Glenn these questions. So Glenn, I'll ask you, as is our tradition, are you sitting comfortably?
I am indeed.
Here they come, four in a row. So when do we get our VR gaming helmet I was promised with my Genesis way back in 1994?
It was called the Virtual Boy. Nintendo released it, and it was a horrible failure. I think
now we have the tech. Don't we want it now?
I've owned so many of those. I owned the scuba headset. Remember that for PC where it was like the weird visor thing? I mean, I actually used Sega VR back at the CES, whichever year that was in 93. It was terrible, terrible game.
Yeah, bad stuff. Oh, but we finally have the tech and they've given up on it. I don't understand.
They totally have. Totally have. And it's a shame because it was an interesting idea.
All right. Who is the next big video game mascot sensation?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think Little Big Planet. Maybe
Sackboy.
I think Little Big Planet 2. I've been playing that in my breaks from DC Universe Online, and I've been enjoying it. But I think Sackboy is a very cute, but also strangely creepy mascot because he looks kind of like one of those court testimony shows on the doll where he touched you sort of dolls. So I think that might be holding Sackboy back a little bit.
Plus, he's named Sackboy.
Yeah, but. You know, the kids like the edgy, so it's possible, but I think that's my favorite.
That is the correct answer. I love Sackboy.
Yeah.
Number three, when will we finally decide if chili is soup or stew?
Ooh, I think if done properly, it is stew. If, you know, I'm vegan, but I make a hearty, hearty chili, and I think that's the key. If you want soup, eat soup, but chili is, it should be a meal. It should be really...
No, it's spoo.
Spoo.
And when I make it, it's my spoo. Yeah,
that really sounds unappetizing.
That's awesome. Yes. I will never eat Tom's my spoo. Yeah. Anyway, if one company bought out every other video game company in the world, who would you prefer that be?
Oh, that's a tough one. I would prefer that it was Nintendo, but if someone were to actually do it, it would probably be Sony. Maybe Microsoft, but I think Nintendo would be the most interesting to see if they would sort of diversify and, if they were going to be all things to all people and really open it up more. They haven't been trying to do that as much in recent years because I don't think it worked as well the last time. But I think that maybe gaming is matured enough that they could do some really interesting stuff.
I'm glad you didn't say Activision because that would have been, we'd have to kick you off the show. Escorted out of the cottage.
Activision would.
Everything would be overly franchised and run into the ground, and it'd be terrible.
Tensor Guy suggested Intellivision.
Yeah.
Hey.
No, 3DO should make a comeback.
3DO.
Trip Hawkins has ideas that were not fully realized.
He does. Or
better yet, get the Tremels from Atari. I think they could really bring gaming a whole new revolution of
We'll just.
The Trip Hawkins idea would be great because he. What have we seen from him lately? I picture him on an island somewhere on a big throne of pillows, just waiting for the next.
We will name him our gaming king.
Trip Hawkins has got to be really bitter about Steve Jobs being Steve Jobs and Trip Hawkins really failing miserably in that goal.
Yeah,
because he was trying to do that before Jobs really, had his second coming.
Jobs had next,
way ahead of his time. Way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Jobs got a second chance at. The other company.
Now, if Trip Hawkins comes back,
Hawkins had been, brought into EA or something and given it or something.
But instead, maybe, 3DO was such a weird, that was such a weird system with, I hesitate to even call many of the titles released for it games.
Things.
But, and I knew a lot of good companies and good people that worked for companies developing 3DO games. And, I like some of the stuff Crystal Dynamics did. I thought there were some interesting titles out there.
Yeah, a good friend of mine was an exec producer at 3DO, went on to EA, is doing some great EA sports stuff. He does the rugby franchise up there. And, they're really talented
folks. A lot of the people, some of the Crystal Dynamics people went on to Rockstar and doing, a lot of great titles. I mean, it's the thing. Talent did come out of it, but it was too ahead of its time. It was too expensive. Yeah. And way too much shovelware.
It's just as bad to be early as late.
Yes.
With an idea.
Yep. Exactly.
Yep.
All right, Randall Bennett, are you sitting comfortably?
Yes-ish.
Good. Then we will begin your four questions. Number one, will the first aliens we meet be bipedal?
No, they will be a sludge and communicate telepathically.
A sludge. And we won't be able to understand them because we'll just be like shoveling them up.
Exactly.
They'll be taken up by street sweepers. Question number two, what will be the most popular chain store on Mars?
It will be Mars Mart, of course. Sam Walton's grandchildren will come up with the Mars Walmart.
Or perhaps a resurrected cryogenically frozen Sam Walton.
Exactly.
Mars Mart. That's obvious. Now that it's a silly question now that you put it that way.
I know.
Question number three. How many years before we have canned gourmet meals that actually taste really good?
Trick question, infinity. It will never happen.
We will never have canned gourmet meals.
No, it will never be good. It will always be awful. Now, replicated meals, a la Star Trek,
yeah,
potentially.
Okay.
But in a can, I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Can I get a good replicator at Mars Mart?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it'll be the best food available on Mars. So that'll be like the only way to defeat that like definition.
Known as best food west of Olympus Mons. All right. Question number four. How many jobs will you have had by 2012?
Oh, my gosh. Like 600, probably.
Uncountable. Also, yeah. an infinite question.
Really? Hopefully just one.
So. Excellent. Yes, I wish you well. Randall is a digital nomad in the truest sense of the word.
Lots of people, lots of cool stuff. So, yeah.
All right, you have successfully completed four questions. Thank you, Randall.
Thanks.
And we have successfully completed the show, Scott.
Oh, my gosh, 65 is over. What's left to do in this world? I guess 66? Or no, 67? What are we, 65, 66?
We go right to 67. We're not going to do 66.
That'll be the lost episode. I don't know what that'll even cover.
Two-thirds of the beast. We can't do that.
Yeah, this has been great. You guys have been awesome guests. Like I said, the crazy ass is always sometimes a really unknown on this show, and I really, really enjoyed these today. It was really great.
Glenn Rubenstein, a freelance everything. Let folks know where they can find what you're doing these days.
On twitter.com/Glenn Rubenstein. That's where I am lately.
All right. Check out where he is in DC Universe Online.
Blizzard Man on the No Man's Land server.
And Randall Bennett, what are you up to these days?
I write for a website called VidPlusPlus. It's about video. So if you follow any of that video stuff, it's what I care about right now. Also, I work for a company called CastFire. We do video platform stuff. And, I'm on Twitter. Randall B on the Twitter, if you follow people and do that stuff. So,
excellent. Thank you both for being on the show.
Thank you.
Definitely appreciate it. Scott Johnson, what do we got left before we get out of here?
Oh, nothing. I just tell people if they like morning shows and you like good banter between morning hosts, check out my new show every morning except Fridays. So that's Monday through Thursday, 7 a.m. Pacific on the Frog Pants Network at frogpants.com/TMS. They will be sorry, or no, they'll be glad they did.
I don't think they'll be sorry. They'll be glad. I got to check it out. I haven't actually caught an episode yet because I'm too bleary-eyed. But I just found out it's on at 8.
It's 8 a.m. Pacific. Your time.
Yeah. That's not that early.
My goal is to get you on sooner than later. Ask a Tech Expert is the segment. Let's make this happen.
Oh, who are you going to get on to answer the questions?
You. We're going to have you on, man.
No, I don't want to do that. Get it wrong. All right. Don't forget to leave comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email to forecastpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
See ya.
But it's only 32 years away.
Way.